from the St. Louis Public Radio Newsroom. This is The Gateway. I'm Abby Larico. It's Wednesday, November 6th, the day after the election. And today, we'll dig into these local results. A big headline here, Missouri ended up voting for Republican candidates Tuesday while legalizing abortion.
I think we've learned from this election cycle that voters have wildly varied views on things.
The people and causes that emerged victorious after the vote, how people impacted by these decisions are reacting, and what happens now. That's all coming up on The Gateway. In the presidential race, Missouri once again went red and gave its 10 electoral votes to former President Donald Trump, who the AP declared as winner just before 5 o'clock this morning. Trump will become the 47th president of the United States. Illinois, meanwhile, remained blue, with its 19 electoral votes going to Vice President Kamala Harris. Now the statewide ballot issues in Missouri, starting with Amendment 3. Missourians voted to put abortion rights in the state constitution. Voters backed Amendment 3 by a 53% margin. The measure would protect abortion up until fetal viability and will likely bring an end to the state's ban on most abortions, which went into place after the U.S. Supreme Court struck down Roe v. Wade. While Amendment 3 won't legalize abortion immediately, Tori Schaefer of the ACLU of Missouri says it sends a message to Republicans who instituted the ban.
My only hope is that they will do their job and uphold the will of the people when we go back in session in January.
Some Republicans have said they may try to place another ballot measure before voters in 2026 to either repeal or replace Amendment 3. As of Wednesday morning, Amendment 2 is projected to pass, making sports betting legal in Missouri. As Tadeo Ruiz Sandoval reports, it was the closest amendment contest in the state.
Amendment 2 divided Missourians over the promise to help fund education through a 10% sports gambling tax. While proponents say it will help Missouri schools, opponents say the amendment's writing has too many tax loopholes and doesn't guarantee additional revenue to education. Steve Spellman is a Boone County resident who says he voted yes on Amendment 2 with some concerns attached.
Whenever I hear advocates talking about it's going to go to the schools or it's going to go to the veterans, well, maybe, but maybe not. What's the net benefit there?
It is now up to the Missouri Gaming Commission to set a start date for legal sports gambling, which cannot be any later than December 1st, 2025. I'm Tadeo Ruiz Sandoval.
Missouri voters have also approved a constitutional amendment to increase the state's minimum wage and require private employers to provide paid sick leave. That means minimum wage will increase to $13.75 an hour in January and get to $15 an hour in January of 2026. Fran Marion has been a fast food worker for more than 20 years. She says this win culminates a long fight from workers like her organizing under the Fight for 15 movement.
It's a victory that we've been fighting for a decade, and it feels like finally victory is in our favor.
Starting in May of next year, employers must provide 1 hour of paid sick time for every 30 hours worked. The passage of Amendment 7 makes ranked choice voting illegal, though not much will change. Ranked choice voting was already not used much in Missouri, and the amendment grants an exception to cities already using it in nonpartisan municipal elections, which includes the city of St. Louis's approval voting system. Amendment 7 also includes a redundant constitutional clause that makes it illegal for non-citizens to vote, which is already banned. Amendment 5, which would have made way for a casino at the Lake of the Ozarks, did not pass, and the cap of gambling boat licenses in the state will remain at 13. Amendment 6 also didn't pass, which means it is likely the state legislature will look for another way to pay for the sheriff's retirement fund. Republican Lieutenant Governor Mike Kehoe will be the 58th governor of Missouri. Kehoe won his election Tuesday night, beating Democratic opponent Crystal Quaid. As St. Louis Public Radio's Sarah Kellogg reports, Kehoe has a litany of policies he says he intends to tackle as governor.
Kehoe easily won the governor's race, in which he was favored over his Democratic opponent. He will take over the governorship from current Governor Mike Parson, who originally appointed Kehoe as lieutenant governor in 2018. Kehoe says addressing crime will be his first focus as governor. He also says he intends to introduce a proposed crime bill early in his tenure.
We will ensure that Missouri is a state where it's easier to be a cop than a criminal. And We will not rest until the criminals who make our streets and neighborhoods dangerous are held accountable.
Other policies Keogh spoke on include reducing taxes and business regulations. In Jefferson City, I'm Sarah Kellogg, St. Louis Public Radio.
Missouri Republicans won each statewide office up for grabs in yesterday's election, including Attorney General, Secretary of State, Treasurer, and Lieutenant Governor. Incumbent Attorney General Andrew Bailey defeated opponent Democrat Elad Gross. Bailey will serve his first full four-year term after Governor Parson appointed him to the post in 2022, replacing Eric Schmidt. State Senator Denny Hoskins defeated Democratic State Representative Barbara Pfeiffer, as expected, to become Secretary of State. Republican Missouri Treasurer Vivek Malik defeated Democratic challenger Mark Osmak. Political newcomer Dave Wassinger defeated Democratic State Representative Richard Brown to serve as Missouri's next lieutenant governor. Josh Hawley will return to the U.S. Senate to represent Missouri, this time with his party in the majority. The Republican incumbent beat Democratic challenger Lucas Kuntz 55-42%. Hawley told supporters last night he is grateful for their efforts and sees his re-election as Missouri sending a clear message.
Missouri has said that we believe in this country, that God is not done with America yet, and we are here to fight for America's future. Are you with me?
Yeah. Hawley and Kuntz's campaign was bitter at times, including a confrontation at the state fair and a debate days before the election where both candidates took jabs at each other. St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell is heading to Washington, D.C. to represent Missouri's 1st Congressional District. As St. Louis Public Radio's Chad Davis reports, Bell says he's focused on regional growth.
Bell defeated Republican Andrew Jones Jr. Tuesday. He was heavily favored to win in the Democratic-dominated district after a contentious August primary defeating incumbent Cori Bush. The race garnered national attention for Bell and Bush's stance on the Israel-Hamas war and the amount of money from pro-Israel groups to Bell's campaign. Bell says he's focused on several policy agendas, including protecting voting, reproductive, and LGBTQ rights, and battling climate change, as well as working with local leaders to strengthen the region.
The only way that happens is if all of our stakeholders, all of our elected officials, all of our constituents, if you will, are working together toward that goal.
County Executive Sam Page says applications for the next prosecuting attorney will open in the coming days. I'm Chad Davis, St. Louis Public Radio.
Bell will be one of two newcomers to the U.S. House of Representatives from Missouri. Republican State Senator Bob Onder was elected to represent the 3rd District. Republican Congresswoman Ann Wagner will return for a 7th term for the 2nd District. And Republican Congressman Jason Smith will continue representing the 8th District. It was a strong election night for the Illinois local congressional delegation. Nikki Budzinski, Mike Bost, and Mary Miller all won another term in the U.S. House. Budzinski, a Democrat, beat Republican Joshua Lloyd by an unofficial margin of 53-47%. That win will earn her a second term in Illinois' 13th congressional district, which stretches from the Metro East to Urbana-Champaign. Republican Bost beat Democrat Brian Roberts in a landslide, roughly 76-24. The victory will propel Bost to his 6th term representing southern Illinois. And Miller represents much of rural central Illinois and did not face a true challenge in either the primary or general elections this year. She'll start her 3rd term in January. The race for control of the U.S. House is still on as of Wednesday morning. Zooming in now to local government, a Republican attorney is the new St. Louis County Council member for the 6th District. Michael Archer defeated Democrat Kevin Shartner 53-47% in final unofficial results. Archer will replace Ernie Trakas, who often clashed with his fellow Republicans on the council. The 6th District covers the southern part of the county. Democrats handily won the other two council seats Tuesday night. Gretchen Banger will represent the 2nd District, replacing Kelly Dunaway, who chose not to seek re-election, and Shalonda Webb will keep her seat in the 4th District. The St. Louis County Council has voters' permission to hire its own attorneys. Proposition C passed with 62% of the vote Tuesday in final unofficial results, well above the simple majority needed. The attorneys hired under the new measure would give legal advice, help draft legislation, and represent council members in lawsuits. Voters in the county also approved a measure to change the way vacancies are filled on the St. Louis County Port Authority Board of Commissioners, and they agreed to move the start date of the terms for council member, county executive, prosecutor, and assessor from the 2nd Tuesday in January to the 1st Tuesday. In the city of St. Louis, voters declined to give the Board of Aldermen additional power over the budget. Proposition B failed to get even a simple majority in final unofficial results Tuesday night. It would have needed 60% to pass. If adopted, the Board of Aldermen would have gained the ability to increase budget line items without the approval of the Board of Estimate and Apportionment. Backers said they needed the ability to advocate for the needs of their constituents. City voters did easily approve two other charter changes. One creates a Department of Transportation to oversee planning of all modes of transportation in the city beginning in 2029. The other lifts the cap on fines and fees related to vacant buildings. People who stay in short-term rentals, such as Airbnbs in the city of St. Louis, will soon pay a little more for their stay. Voters on Tuesday adopted a 3% per night fee with 68% of the vote. Again, those results are final but unofficial. At least half of the revenue raised would go to the construction and maintenance of affordable housing. The remaining would go to other housing initiatives like eviction prevention. And back in Illinois, voters in Madison County have approved an advisory referendum to pursue seceding from Illinois. St. Louis Public Radio's Will Bauer reports Madison is now the first Metro East county to approve the symbolic measure, roughly 56-44%.
Madison's county vote now joins it with 32 other downstate counties. Until now, all counties to pass the referendums had been rural. While actually forming a new state remains a tough political sell, advocates believe the advisory referendums send a signal. Madison County resident Dave Stouffer has been a longtime supporter of the movement.
We're hoping that this sends a very distinct and clear message to Springfield and to Cook County that the days of political malfeasance and financial malfeasance come to an end.
Six other counties, mostly in southwest Illinois, also approved the advisory referendums on election night by wide margins. I'm Will Bauer, St. Louis Public Radio.
Okay, as we've heard, Missouri ended up electing Republicans up and down the ballot on Tuesday, but they also legalized abortion, making yet another example of how the state's voters like conservative politicians and left-of-center policies. St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum discusses with editor Jonathan All.
Jason, what were the major takeaways from this election?
This was yet another year where Democrats did not make any substantial gains in Missouri politics. They lost all the statewide contests by pretty wide margins. They didn't really make any substantial gains in the legislature, and they didn't even come close to unseating any members of Congress. So along with the likelihood of Donald Trump becoming president again, this would be, for the most part, a really sad night for the Missouri Democratic Party and a really triumphant one for Missouri Republicans, except that Missourians legalized abortion into its constitution.
Amendment 3 passed. What's next?
Most likely lawsuits. This measure does not actually legalize abortion right away, but it does provide a solid foundation for people to bring about litigation to strike down Missouri's near total abortion ban. I don't know how long this process is going to take. It could take months. It could go very quickly because the language in this amendment is not ambiguous. An abortion ban would not survive constitutional scrutiny based on the way this amendment is written. But I think we're going to be talking about Amendment 3 for a long time because once it goes through the courts, it is going to radically change abortion access in Missouri from having nothing to possibly having something, which I think is a really major shift in our state's policy and politics.
So again, we've seen a statewide electorate that voted for Republicans but passed initiative that Republicans oppose: abortion, a minimum wage increase, voted against using court fees to fund prosecutors and sheriff's offices. If you look at all of the ballot amendments, they're mostly Democratic positions.
I'm actually not surprised by this because I think we've learned from this election cycle that voters have wildly varied views on things. And it is possible for somebody who is a Republican and votes for Donald Trump or Mike Kehoe or Josh Hawley and be pro-choice, which I know that sounds crazy to people, but those are the types of Republicans I grew up with in suburban Chicago. There aren't enough of those Republicans to elect a like-minded Republican in Missouri. They do exist. And I think we saw the fact that Donald Trump won the state, I think, by about 17 points, but this ended up passing by 6. A lot of people were willing to split their tickets on this one.
Let's talk about the Senate race. Josh Hawley won re-election. Lucas Kuntz put up a fight. He was incredibly well-funded. He was a moderate Democrat, and he still couldn't beat what a lot of people see as an unpopular Republican. Does this give the Democrats any playbook or any chance in the next 12 years?
Building up a state party that is completely collapsed cannot be done overnight. It takes years and years and years of work. I agree with you that Kuntz put up a good fight. He raised a lot of money. This was his second time running for Senate, so he had a little bit of name recognition. But typically, Democrats who have won U.S. Senate seats were statewide officials, or they had been in the legislature before they were statewide officials. And Missouri Democrats can't win a statewide office, so they cannot cultivate that pipeline that allows them to win something like a U.S. Senate seat.
That was St. Louis Public Radio political correspondent Jason Rosenbaum speaking with Jonathan Aull about Tuesday's election results in Missouri. Along with all this coverage of important political issues, you turn to STLPR journalists for our coverage of the arts and culture scene in our community. So now, something totally different, and a break from all the post-election content coming your way today. Art maker and choreographer Brendan Fernandez specializes in dance works performed inside museums and galleries. 4 dancers will perform his latest work Friday and Saturday at the Pulitzer Arts Foundation amid an exhibition of sculpture by the late American artist Scott Burton, whose work blurs the line between fine art and everyday objects. St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin asked Fernandez what his dances have in common with Burton's sculptures.
Questions of gay, queer, legacy, visibility, the questions of freedoms and solidarities. The work that he did has allowed and led me to be able to do things that I am now doing in my work. There's questions of visibility, invisibility, being seen, being heard, that I see in Scott's work and that I'm also trying to tease and challenge as well in my work.
If I just bumped into you in an elevator and asked what you're doing at the Pulitzer, what is this performance?
So I kind of feel there's a beautiful kind of duet happening, and it's between me and Scott Burton conceptually, but also between like my dancers and his sculptures, or my dancers with themselves.
The actual movement can be rather subtle, right? It's more emotionally expressive than acrobatic.
Yes, and I'm thinking about cruising and of the idea of like cruising as a body language to signal and signify a call, almost like for a response for gay people to identify and find a safe space to kind of be with each other. Normally under the auspices of a sexual encounter. These kind of like moments, like the flipping of the wrist. The broken wrist is a symbol for queerness in a certain way that, you know, like bent wrist, not straight.
What's the look and feel of how this takes shape?
It's moving throughout the space. So the audience kind of is also a participant that they move with the dancers if they choose. They can watch the whole thing or they can also just be there for a few minutes. I also like that a museum goer might come to the Pulitzer not knowing that the performance is happening and then have that encounter. There's a certain sense of intimacy to the way the dancers move as well. There's an intimacy with how they like lay on the sculptures, are moving with the sculptures, touching the sculptures.
This really disrupts what we expect to be happening in a museum. And it's could be almost confusing to museum goers, right? People
Absolutely.
Walking around the pieces, touching some of the pieces. And in this case, there are a few that are designated as, you know, anyone can touch them.
Museums tell us how to move in their spaces. You know, we don't touch things. We have to be quiet. We don't run. And so having a performance in the space, like, you know, I'm kind of like rupturing that hegemony, that hierarchy, and sort of questioning about new ways of doing things, new ways of understanding things.
I want to talk a little about the exhibition. There's a piece that's often described as a subtle or not so subtle reference to a sexual pose between two men. Once you see it, you see it. I found that extremely potent because it's a reference to gay life that had to be hidden in plain sight.
Yes.
In the 1980s.
The idea of like the being seen and unseen is a big part of Scott's work. And I think that's something that I challenge and play with as well. I want to be seen, I want to be heard, but I also want to be invisible. Like, if I have my freedoms and rights, am I going to be invisible? Do I not need to be calling out to be seen and heard? And so I'm kind of playing with that dynamic that sculpture, that pose kind of proposes.
And that's one of the pieces that people are allowed to touch and sit down on. It is a chair.
But I also love that you need both pieces to be together for it to physically function and stand and to work. Without the other, it falls apart. And I think there's such a beautiful, complex poeticness to this object in its invisibility, in its hypervisibility. And yeah, the dancers, they sit on it, they lay with it, so they kind of create another layer of intimacy with it.
That was artist and choreographer Brendan Fernandez speaking with St. Louis Public Radio's Jeremy Goodwin. The Gateway is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, a listener-supported service of the University of Missouri-St. Louis. Music by Ryan McNeely of Adult Fur. You can find more coverage of all of these results and issues we talked about here from our hardworking St. Louis Public Radio journalists at stlpr.org. I'm Abby Larico, and from the St. Louis Public Radio newsroom, this has been The Gateway.